powerful. That was while the faith of the early Muslims, whose children wasted away before their eyes, there were many people who died there, many were plagued with diseases, and many suffered from starvation, was not shaken. The commander of the faithful told his dear son, Muhammad ibn al-Hanafiya, "The mountains may be shaken, they may be removed, but your faith must not be shaken." That was the same piece of advice that the Holy Prophet gave in his testament. That is the way the Islamic Ummah must rise up. That is what the bi'tha of the Islamic Ummah means. That is the lesson that the Prophet ﷺ taught us. That is what bi'tha teaches us. The most important element of unity is the existence of Muhammad, peace be upon him. We say that the holy existence of the great Prophet and Messenger of Islam, sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, is the most important point in creating unity. We have said before that the world of Islam can meet at this point. This is a point where the emotions of all Muslims are connected to one another. This is the center of love and affection in the world of Islam. Of course, you can witness that in the present time, some authors who are financially supported by the Zionists pay attention to this center and insult it. They do this so that the importance of insulting the Islamic Ummah and humiliating the world of Islam diminishes. This is the main point.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزای لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
کتاب الله.
Good night to all our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio broadcasting from Tehran. I'm your presenter for the next hour. And here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran I invite you to listen to. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in the heaven. The best food according to Quran is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week. The month of Ramadan is the best month of the year, and the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in Surah Al-Qadr. We start this hour's lineup with our varied radio productions feature. Then we have today's special daily mixed format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. And our final program this hour will be Black and White. Stay with us for the next hour.
Along the winding and beautiful road, we're heading towards the city of Tuysekan that's enclosed by green and picturesque valleys. A city that was built atop the ruins of an old town destroyed during the Mongol invasion of Eurasia. Tuysekan is in the province of Hamedan in western Iran, about 5 or 6 hours' drive from Tehran. The weather at our destination is mild and pleasant for this time of year, but since the city is surrounded by the Zagros Mountains, it can become very cold at night and at winter times. Because of its vast walnut orchards, Tuysekan is known as the hub of Persian walnut. But that aside, all the things I'm going to show you will point to the rich historical background and culture of this city.
Mansions that has stood the passage of time since the Qajar period is this two-story building, the Masudi House, named after the actual residence, and it's now a museum. Come on, let's go inside.
The most eye-catching thing in the entire house is the chamber on the first floor where guests were entertained. The entire ceiling and walls of this room are covered with stucco, mirror work, paintings and motifs depicting the kings of old Persia, scenes from the Shahnameh or Book of Kings. But this is not the only attraction of the house. If you take a look around, you can easily breathe in the beauty that lies here.
You can imagine. imagine that house was considered to be a grand house about 130 years ago when it was commissioned. The people who lived here were the descendants of a Qajar prince called Abbas Mirza.
The Masudi House isn't the only historical monument in Tusar Khan. There are still plenty more left, and we're going to visit as many as we can.
If you search for the city of Tusar Khan on the internet, one of the first images you'll come across is a photograph of this mausoleum. This is where Habakkuk, one of the prophets in the Hebrew Bible, actually the 8th of the 12 minor prophets, was put to rest.
It's not only because of Habakkuk that this shrine is valuable. The architecture that has allowed this 12-meter-high mausoleum to survive some 900 years is also astonishing. From afar, it appears to have an octagonal form with the cone-shaped roof comprising 16 columns arranged in an interesting way. It is this architectural form that has allowed it to stand firm against storms and earthquakes. Tusar Khan's attractions aren't limited to man-made and historical sites. Apparently, there's more. Some of the locals gave us directions to a location that's home to one of the oldest living trees in Iran.
The 2,000-year-old Barvar sycamore tree. I'd hazard a guess that it's about 35 meters high, and it has a really thick trunk.
Tusar Khan is filled with old and resilient trees, most of which are walnut trees.
Tusar Khan is famous for its top-quality walnut trees, so we've come to this walnut orchard to find out what all the fuss is about.
Walnuts actually grow inside a green husk inside which you have a hard brown walnut shell. The meat's inside the shell, of course. The first step in harvesting walnuts is to actually get them off the trees, and the easiest way to do that is by shaking the branches, and in Tusar Khan, it's done the traditional way.
The locals usually wait for the walnuts to ripen and for the husks to change color before they do this, because then they are able to shake the walnuts loose without harming the tree. People in different cities have different homemade dishes depending on the climate and the vegetation that grows there. Since Tusar Khan is literally filled with walnut trees, we're going to go and find someone who'd be able to prepare a local dish for us with walnut as the main ingredient.
Safavid dynasty, Shah Abbas the Great commissioned the construction of some 999 caravanserais throughout Persia, each of which was approximately 30 to 50 kilometers away from the other.
Okay, so we've arrived at the Shah Abbasi caravanserai. In the old travelers and merchants would stop at these caravanserais to replenish their supplies and refresh before heading out again, maybe even sell a few bits and bobs. It was built in the 11th century in the Safavid architectural style. Once in a while, travelers would have had to stay indoors for days at a time, protected within these high walls from thieves and bandits.
The images that come to mind when you think about all the events that took place here during those times. All the different people, the colorful clothes, the stories these walls would tell, if they could speak.
Artimani Mausoleum, which is where Mirazioddin Artimani was put to rest. It's hard to believe that a mere 41 years ago, this site was in ruins when the Cultural Heritage Organization took up the task of rebuilding it. The mausoleum is symmetrical in shape and design, with three brick arches on each side. This is one of the four entrances, all of which have been decorated with these beautifully designed tiles.
The locals refer to him as Mirazi. He was a very well-known poet and mystic back in the Safavid period. From what I've read, his sonnets and quatrains are very deep and moving.
We've only covered half of what Tuysarkhan has to offer, be it the vast areas of land decorated with natural foliage or whispers of a long-gone civilization. This is Gulna Farnoudi for Iran.
Of my life, does everything with a smile. She's my mother, my sweet mother. She can take the pain away with just one look. That's my mother, my sweet mother. You're the picture in the frame with all the colors of the rainbow. I'm far from ashamed to say I love you so. And here I tonight, it's late but I can't sleep tonight. Forgive me if I take my time, but I just have to let you know, you're so special. She taught me how to pray. We play games every day with my mother, my sweet mother. If I made no sense, you listen with patience. That's my mother, my sweet mother. She would sing a sweet song till I shut my eyes and kiss my head and say goodnight. And I feel safe with you by my side. You're there for every step in my life. I'm sorry. Just have to let you know, you're so precious. If only this was true. I'm in a cold, dark, wet room. I was an orphan, and now I'm 22. I've never known my mom.
another.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam to you, dear brother, dear sister, in faith and humanity. So welcome, you are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, which in this program we're going to speak about turning setbacks into success. So be with us. Today is Wednesday, 24th of Rabiul Awal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 26th of the month of Shahrivar, 1404 of the solar calendar, and the 17th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We open Allah's book and we'll listen to verse 177 of chapter Al-Baqarah.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ليس البر أن تولوا وجوهكم قبل المشرق والمغرب ولكن البر من آمن بالله واليوم الآخر والملائكة والكتاب والنبيين وآتى المال على حبه ذوي القربى واليتامى والمساكين وابن السبيل والسائلين وفي الرقاب وأقام الصلاة وآتى الزكاة والموفون بعهدهم إذا عاهدوا والصابرين في البأساء والضراء وحين البأس أولئك الذين صدقوا وأولئك هم المتقون.
Righteousness is not that you turn your faces toward the east or the west, but true righteousness is in one who believes in Allah, the last day, the angels, the book, and the prophets, and gives wealth, in spite of love for it, to relatives, orphans, the needy, the traveler, those who ask for help, and for freeing slaves, and who establishes prayer and gives zakah, those who fulfill their promise when they promise, and those who are patient in poverty and hardship and during battle. Those are the ones who have been true, and it is those who are the righteous.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The faith of a person in Allah causes him to be humble before him and to stand firm with no obedience before tyrants. Where the faith in resurrection creates eyesight and magnanimity, and faith in angels refers to the existence of belief in the processes of supernatural, including the faith in revelation, providence, and etc. Faith in prophets Is a belief in a straight way and true guidance existing throughout history? Its evidence leading to the fact that man has never been aimless and absolutely free in this world.
Just the words of Allah, mercy and kindness and hope for everyone. Peace be upon you, O Muhammad.
We go straightly toward the topic of this episode, turning setbacks into success. The prevalent fear that can negatively affect a person's life is the fear of failing. People may become fearful of taking chances or attempting new things as a result, which may prevent them from realizing their full potential. Failure to worry can cause stress and anxiety, both of which are harmful to a person's physical and mental health. A way to overcome the fear of failure is to reframe your thinking. Instead of seeing failure as a negative outcome, try to see it as a learning opportunity. Remind yourself that everyone fails at some point, and that's a natural part of the learning and growth process. It can also be helpful to set achievable goals for yourself and to celebrate small wins along the way. This can help you build confidence and resilience and make it easier to handle setbacks or failures when they occur.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to today's special. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about how to turn failure into success. It is important to understand that these difficult situations happen by the will of Allah. And although they might feel like a defeat or a disaster, they are a means to success, or they are a lesson. They may even be a reward, but perhaps we may not recognize without the help of hindsight. Let's look at Quran again, chapter 9. Nothing will befall us except what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has decreed for us. Again, moreover, chapter 2, verses 155 to 157. We shall certainly test you by afflicting you with fear, hunger, loss of properties, and lives and fruits. Give glad tidings then to those who remain patient. Those who, when any affliction smites them, they say, verily, we belong to Allah, and it is to Him we shall return. Upon them will be the blessings of their Lord, and it is they who are rightly guided. So the condition is that contentment with Allah's decree.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
It's very strange, but let's look at the benefits of failure. Failure builds a strength of character. Yes, facing failure is great for building your strength of character. Dealing with projects that didn't go as planned or completely failed can really test your determination, courage, and resolve. But managing to pick yourself up and start again can prove to yourself that you are made of tougher stuff. failure can make you work harder. That's another fact. Successful people have often said that their biggest failures became their greatest inspirations. They are refused to be beaten by failing or and start again with even more self-motivation to succeed.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake? Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, the world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you.
This is today's special, which looks at the ways to turn failure into success. One of the ways is this. Failure is a ladder to success, not a setback. That viewpoint is very important. Considering failure as a progressive move forward, success rather than a regressive one is a transformative mindness shift that can greatly influence one's ability to bounce back, stay motivated, and maintain a positive perspective throughout one's endeavors. This enables you to reinterpret setbacks as chances for personal development and advancement. Benefits of considering failure as a stepping stone to success. This is another way. Keeps you motivated and encourages you to bound back. Helps you analyze and learn from experiences. Cultivates a positive outlook. Helps you mitigate challenges.
There are two schools of thought when it comes to tawakkul, yes? There is the tawakkul that is espoused by certain individuals, which means that we leave everything to Allah and we don't do anything. There are some of these Sufi mystics, they go on the desert, they do not work, they say, whatever Allah gives me, this is tawakkul, I would not work. I will do whatever Allah wants me to and He will provide me with the rizq, whatever it will come. Another school says, no, I will do whatever is necessary. If it doesn't work, then I will turn to Allah. Then I will ask Allah. Because this world is full of asbab, full of means, yes? It is neither this or this. Somebody asked the messenger of Allah. He said, Ya Rasulallah, what is the definition of tawakkul? I have my camel, yes? And I want to look after this camel. Should I leave it outside the mosque just like that and say, Ya Allah, look after it? What should I do? The Prophet of Islam says, tie it and say, Ya Allah, look after it. It is both what? The notion of utilizing the means, but recognizing that without Allah, it will not be fulfilled. It is the combination of submission and reliance on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but at the same time, knowing that He has made things that are the means. Once Musa alayhi salam became ill, he said, I will not take any medicine. I will only ask Allah. He will cure me. وَإِذَا مَرِثْتُ فَهُوَ يَشْفِينَ. Yes, the Quran says, when I am ill, it is He who gives me the cure. Allah reveals to Musa, O Musa, if you do not take the medicine, by my might and glory, I will never cure you. Why? He says, you take the medicine and you believe that I am the one who cured you. And you place your submission in my hands, but you take the medicine. Yes? So this tawakkul, Allah says, وَتَوَكَّلْ عَلَى اللَّهِ وَكَفَى بِاللَّهِ وَكِيلًا. How can you rely on other human beings?
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we'll meet you soon. Till then, fi amanillah.
They told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for. They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for. Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Black and white.
The greatness of a nation, the greatness of its people, is not defined by its size, the weapons it possesses, the money held in international banks, or the skyscrapers it boasts.
Dineros depositado en la banca internacional, ni por los rascacielos.
Instead, it's determined by the resolve of its people to pursue a fair policy that benefits themselves and all of humanity, and to stand in solidarity with those fighting for sovereignty and independence. This is exemplified by Yemen and its people, who teaches daily what it means to support a nation that is being attacked, massacred, and starved, much like the Palestinian people. The Yemenis have embraced the Palestinian cause as their own, bearing the consequences of this stance, as the imperialists and Zionists do not remain passive.
No se quedan impávidos. Por el contrario.
On the contrary, they bomb various ports in Yemen and commit acts of murder. Nevertheless, Yemen does not kneel. It responds decisively and effectively against Israeli territory, targeting airports, ports, and even U.S. and British aircraft carriers and other ships in the Red Sea. Yemen prevents any cargo intended for the Zionist entity from passing through its waters. They have sunk ships. So what greater demonstration of solidarity exists today for the peace on earth? Who can show greater solidarity than this?
¿Quién puede mostrar mayor solidaridad que esa? Que un pueblo no muy numeroso.
A small community, not particularly wealthy and facing significant challenges in life, is nonetheless capable of feeling the pain of others.
Es capaz de
embracing it as their own and making the struggles of others their own cause. To speak of Yemen today is to speak of the awareness of solidarity that exists in the world, as these are not mere polite statements or temporary declarations. They are tangible actions that involve their own blood, their own lives. This is surely something that the youth and communities around the world must be embracing. Look at that small country, that not-so-numerous population, brave as they come, unlike any other at this moment.
Valiente como el que más, como ningún otro en este instante, que nos muestra de que es posible.
Showing us that it is possible and necessary to stand up against the great imperialist powers, against the entire collective West, against the Zionist entity, to prevent them from carrying out their massacres of the peoples.
Su injerencia sobre los mismos y al mismo tiempo vencer. Eso es el Yemen.
Their interference in their affairs, and at the same time, to triumph. That is Yemen. It is struggle, solidarity, the determination to win, and the commitment to bring about the changes our times demand. The mainstream media can say whatever it wants, can make a fool of itself as always, talking about a people in rags from the desert, who have nothing to eat, yet they get involved in other people's conflicts, because it's not happening to them. They're not Palestinians, and since they're not Palestinians, they shouldn't be involved. However, they build their weapons and use them against the common enemy. This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. ¿Qué es el Yemen? ¿Qué fuerza tiene ese pueblo?
What is Yemen? What strength do these people possess to constantly confront Western powers and the Zionist entity? They embarrass them, attacking their destroyers and aircraft carriers, making some flee at times, striking at the heart of the Zionist entity that occupies Palestinian lands. Where does this strength come from? What is the role? How can a country and a people like that make a series of puppet Arab governments blush with shame, unable to show solidarity and stand by Palestine? Today we will discuss this here on Black and White with Nicola Hadwa from the city of Valparaiso, an international analyst responsible for international relations at the Chilean Committee for Solidarity with Palestine. Welcome to our program, Black and White, Nicola Hadwa.
It's a pleasure, Eduardo, an honor and a joy to be part of such an important and interesting program like yours. So I'm here at your complete disposal.
Nicola, in the introduction, I raised the question of where that ability, that passion, that strength, and that courage of the Yemenis comes from, which the dominant Western media often portrays as desert terrorists.
Del desierto.
Claro. Of course, every enemy of the empire, Eduardo, every foe of Zionism has to deal with their vast misinformation capabilities, which they control. To give you an idea, they manage 52,000 multinational corporations, and within those, they oversee hundreds in the information sector, but in this instance, it pertains to misinformation. We need to get used to the fact, Eduardo, that whatever comes from the West, to illustrate it better, out of every 10 words, 15 are lies. Therefore, reading the Western press is not only pointless, but also a way to poison oneself and become misinformed. The Yemeni people are a historic nation recognized throughout history for being an indomitable people, never humiliated, never defeated. Their sense of national dignity and their concept of a struggle are deeply rooted in the popular masses. You see, there was an aggression, which we can discuss later, from the United States, the United Kingdom, France, and the criminal Israeli entity that commits infanticide, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, supported by Egypt and Sudan, against the poorest Arab country, and yet they could not defeat it and had to leave in disgrace. So we're facing the poorest country in the Arab world, yet it stands out as the most dignified among a region filled with feudal monarchies and treacherous regimes. Yemen and Algeria are currently holding their heads high for the dignity of the Arab peoples, which includes all Arab and Islamic nations, and we must also acknowledge the heroic stance taken by the people and government of Iran.
Nicola, what could we say about the role that the people of Yemen have played, not just ideologically and politically, but in shaking the consciousness of the entire Arab and Muslim world? What specific role have they had in striking against the targets of the Zionist entity and those who collaborate with them, including the United States itself?
Well, Eduardo, the role that Yemen has played is truly impressive. It's remarkable because that country, which seemed unknown to the West and to the popular masses in the West, suddenly emerges on the global geopolitical and geostrategic map as a nation of tremendous significance. The United States goes in with two aircraft carriers, the largest, most complex, and modern ones, along with eight destroyers and frigates, to threaten and attack Yemen in order to assist in protecting the criminal, child-killing entity that is Israel. Notice that, shortly after, one of the aircraft carriers suffered a severe blow, while the other took a moderate hit. Some ships were hit by missiles and had to quickly leave the Arabian Sea and exit the Red Sea, because they realized that Yemen's weapons can reach them. Weapons that, by the way, they built with their own hands. On the other hand, Yemen created a very important maritime blockade, a blockade in the Arabian Sea, in the Gulf of Aden, and in the Red Sea, against the criminal child-killing Zionist entity. This blockade was quite effective, but unfortunately, through land routes, the treacherous feudal monarchies and the Arab collaborators, the reactionary Arabs, created a land corridor to supply the Zionist child-killing entity with the necessary products. Indeed, Yemen was and still is by far the strongest, most determined and best ally, as well as the most effective ally that the Palestinian people have had.
Let's take a break and continue right away, Nicola. Thank you very much. We're back here with Nicola Hadwa for a powerful interview about this incredible country and its wonderful people called Yemen. Nicola, you were discussing how it has humiliated the collective West, as we might say, and they have been forced to take measures to transport their products through alternative routes, which also means higher costs. That's already a victory, by the way. Please continue with what you were saying.
Por favor, continúa en lo que estabas relatando.
Bueno, sí. Yemen logró imponer una ecuación nueva.
Well, yes. Yemen managed to establish a new equation and show that the Israeli child-killing entity was not an invincible army. It was, in fact, a considerably weaker army and country. Unfortunately, those who do the dirty work for this criminal entity are the Arab reactionaries. When Syria, supported by Iraqi militias, was about to enter and open the front to the Golan Heights, the feudal monarchies, along with the Turkish traitors, took it upon themselves to overthrow the Syrian government to prevent them from opening the front to the Golan Heights against Israel. When Hezbollah was delivering a massive beating to the Zionists in southern Lebanon, remember that on the first day of the attack, Eduardo, the first day the criminal Zionist entity attempted to enter Lebanon, It lost 30% of its attacking force and failed to advance even 10 meters. I mean, we need to know that the defeat inflicted by Hezbollah was at such a level. Well, then the Arab reactionaries, with a pro-colonial government, which we could say is recolonized and closely allied with imperialism, threatened Hezbollah with a civil war if they did not agree to a ceasefire with the criminal regime of Israel. In the case of the Palestinians, when the front in Jordan was about to open, the Palestinian National Authority, along with the Zionist agents, mainly Mahmoud Abbas, took it upon themselves to suppress the Palestinian people, the resistance battalions located in Tulkarem, Nablus, and Jenin, arresting many and handing them over to the Israeli child-killing regime. In other words, the Arabs and the Arab reactionaries, they have been the ones doing the dirty work for the Israeli criminal entity. In the case of Yemen, the empire tasked Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates with trying to suffocate Yemen in an operation that involved British, French, and American troops, along with the entire Saudi military and the forces of the worst traitors in the Arab world, the United Arab Emirates, who managed to occupy the province of Ma'arib in Yemen. The province of Ma'arib is home to all of Yemen's oil and gas reserves, aiming to cripple its economy. Nevertheless, Yemen stood firm, defeating the occupying forces, overcoming Saudi Arabia and pushing out many of the imperial British and French soldiers. The Yemeni people are impoverished, I must reiterate, but they are fierce fighters who do not know the meaning of defeat or surrender.
Ni conocen la palabra rendición,
Eduardo. Así es. Nicola, algunos analistas dicen...
Indeed, Nicola, some analysts suggest that there is an exodus of settlers fleeing from the occupied Palestine, citing one of the reasons as the ongoing and persistent missiles and drones coming from Yemen that keep them in a state of anxiety and alertness. In fact, in an analysis I read, it mentioned that the shrapnel that sometimes falls even on the beach prevents them from enjoying their summer, from being by the sea, basking in the sun, and they have to leave because the shrapnel falls around them, which puts them in a state of nervousness and fear. What do you think about the significance of these bombings that may seem small and insignificant, yet are constant?
Insignificante, pero constantes.
De toda la guerra que ha habido ahora, aparte de...
Throughout the ongoing war, aside from the bravery displayed by the Palestinian resistance, which has notably dealt significant blows to the Israeli occupying army in Gaza, consider that they have been fighting for 2 years without being able to defeat the Palestinian resistance. Zionist military analysts claim that the strength of the resistance is only growing. It's worth mentioning that the actions of the Zionist regime mirror those of the Nazis, who, when their soldiers faced defeat, turned to attack the civilian population. What actions is the Zionist regime taking? This regime cannot exist in peace, nor can it thrive in war. Yemen, with its meticulously calculated, well-defined, and carefully planned attacks, has contributed significantly alongside the Palestinian resistance. This is crucial, and I will elaborate a bit more. The fact is that 1.5 million people have emigrated from the occupied territories, and the majority, over 70%, are young individuals who refuse to join the army. They have come to realize that this war is not going to end soon. They understand that they are as vulnerable as the innocent Palestinian civilians. For instance, you can observe that currently 2 or 3 fighters arrive daily from Tel Aviv to Buenos Aires, bringing along the Zionist child killers. This war has uprooted, as I mentioned, 1.5 million occupiers, but what are the implications of this? Not only the fear and the evacuation of occupants from Palestine, which has led the United States and European powers to speak up and reveal their concerns, but we could also say that there is a rapid recognition of the Palestinian state. However, this is aimed at saving the Zionist regime from a definitive and total collapse. Why? 66,000 businesses have gone bankrupt. There are no workers. And the evangelical zealots who are used as cannon fodder to fight against their own Christian brothers have not been enough to get the productive machine running. The banking system is paralyzed, commerce is at a standstill, they cannot meet their international commitments, and they are unable to fix the economy. The most optimistic say that this criminal entity, Israel, could recover in 10 years. The number of Jews coming to Israel have dropped to zero. Consequently, the Israeli regime is becoming completely unviable. On one hand, the Israeli occupiers have realized that their regime was serving transnational corporations and American imperialism rather than their own people, who spoke of a Jewish land meant only for the Jews. Well, they came to understand that they were sending their young men to die. They let them perish and even killed themselves. I mean, whenever they had the chance to eliminate an Israeli captive at the hands of the Hamas fighters, they did so. When an Israeli soldier is captured, the Air Force goes in and bombs the area to kill that soldier, and also the members of the Palestinian resistance. Thus, they have recognized that the regime does not care about the Jewish people or the so-called Jewish land at all. What truly matters to them is the interests of transnational corporations and supporting American imperialism.
Nicola, tú pusiste un punto muy importante al inicio.
You made a very important point at the beginning just now. You mentioned that the movement seen in various European countries to recognize and establish a Palestinian state is either a salvation or an attempt to preserve the occupying Zionist entity. Please elaborate a bit more on that, as it is quite significant.
Mira que es muy importante.
Claro. Es lo más importante. En este momento, Estados Unidos...
Of course, that's the most important thing. Right now, the United States and NATO, having seen all their plans fail, are moving on to another plan, hoping the Arabs will do the dirty work for the Israeli criminal entity. There is talk of quickly recognizing the Palestinian state. The Palestinian National Authority is not just some treacherous collaborators. In fact, the Palestinian Authority is like a second Israel. Those collaborators would be responsible for managing Gaza and the West Bank. Here, the criminal Israel has become divided. The majority does not want the Palestinian Authority to govern either Gaza or the West Bank, and the parliament has agreed to annex all of the West Bank. Therefore, this plan could fail just like the French plans of Charles de Gaulle, which were undermined by the most reactionary elements in Algeria, namely the OAS. So, in this case, once this figurative state is created and accepted, which would have no army, whose economy is intertwined with Israel, and which lacks clear borders, it is ultimately a foolish idea that only the United States and Israel could conceive. Once the Palestinian Authority wishes to enter Gaza, then the Arab League would be responsible for forming an army, supported by the Zionist army, equipped to enter Gaza and defeat the resistance that the United States, France, and the United Kingdom, with their child-killing Zionist army, have been unable to overcome, as they have all been defeated. I mention this because there are American, French, and British border soldiers, official troops who are there and have died, and among them, more than 50 Americans have lost their lives.
Nada más que norteamericanos han muerto más de 50.
Así es, Nicola. Bueno, el tiempo aquí es brutal.
That's right, Nicola. I really appreciate your remarks, and it's clear how important the struggle of the Yemeni people is, along with their courageous attitude and a solidarity towards the Palestinian people, serving as an example for all countries that claim to be sovereign. Thank you so much, Nicola, for being with us here on Black and White.
Thanks. It's a pleasure and honor for me to be part of such a great program that you host, Eduardo. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shines above. You're the reason I never give up. You're the one I try for.